today. We're doing a very short episode with a quick update on the Israeli elections and where they stand, as well as that linguist that was helping out Hezbollah in Lebanon on this week's edition of Mideast News Brief. And welcome to this week's edition of Mideast News Brief. I am your host, Winston R. Holland. Delighted to be with you. I have not been behind the mic for a couple of weeks, and that is for good reason. And that is because I got hit with the flu early last week. Fortunately, I began to recover pretty quickly, actually. I got over the actual flu pretty quickly. Thank God for that. However, the recovery is what has taken a long time, but I figured I would go ahead and get a quick show in. I'm not at my full strength, so if I sound a bit lethargic this week, forgive me. Also, I wanted to get a show in because I will not be here, but will be on vacation next week, and so I definitely wanted to at least touch on a couple of stories. I'm not gonna go into the deal with the Taliban. I haven't done enough kind of research into that to really feel like I'm able to kind of parse that out in a way that's needed in a show like this. But suffice it to say, there was a peace deal reached between the United States and the Taliban in Afghanistan. Leading up to the peace deal, believe it or not, as bloodthirsty as they were, even the Taliban was able to refrain and restrain themselves from terrorist activity. However, once that peace deal was signed, and this is what they said they would resume attacks on Afghan forces. That is what they have done, and so now we're in a kind of a precarious situation to really kind of see how this thing is going to play out. The United States did a drone attack on the Afghan forces, and apparently the deal itself did not say that the Taliban was going to never attack Afghan forces, that basically the Taliban did uphold kind of the letter of the agreement from some of the analysis that I've been reading on it. And so the vehicle that the Trump administration is using to basically exit us out of Afghanistan, it's not probably working to the full extent that they would want it to work. So we're going to monitor that, keep a close eye on that. I've been very skeptical of a peace deal with the Taliban. I'm kind of surprised that they were able to actually withhold violence for even 7 days. But I guess in their mind, they felt like it was worth it to eventually get U.S. troops out of the country. I don't think we should be there. I don't think we have ultimately a point of being there. I don't think we can affect the change necessary that would justify us in any way, shape, or form of being there. So it is time to get out. It's been time to get out. For whatever reason, the politicians in charge have wanted to just keep us in this war, keep us spending trillions of dollars, keep us putting our military on the line, and giving lives, literally giving the lives of our military for essentially what really is and what Trump has described as an endless war. And this is one of those wars that he wants to end, thankfully, and it does need to be ended. Will this peace deal ultimately be the vehicle by which they do that? Maybe. Look, it is an election year, and Trump wants to get out of Afghanistan. This would be a big political victory for him that he would then be able to go and just bash the left over the head with, look, you had Obama for 8 years and you guys stayed in Afghanistan. You guys claim to be the party of anti-war, but yet you guys just stayed and continued operations in Afghanistan, didn't even try to get out. So this is going to be a big club he's going to be able to beat Joe Biden over the head with, because Joe Biden is going to be the nominee. And amazingly, I thought Joe Biden was out, like we all thought. But now that he's doing this, well, there's no question in my mind that this is who the DNC is going to use to run against Trump. Even if Bernie Sanders does get the most delegates, they're going to cheat him out of it again. They're going to go to Biden. I believe we're looking at a Trump versus Biden matchup. And let me tell you something. That that is going to be a sight to see. Okay, let's talk about some Israeli elections, shall we? So, this is the third time in the past year and a half or so that the past year that the Israelis have gone to the polls to elect their party of choice to represent them in their Knesset or their Congress. The first time was March of 2019, second time was October 2019, and now here we are, March 2020. Again, essentially the Israelis were not able to, or the winners of the elections, either the biggest parties, either Netanyahu with his Likud party, or Benny Gantz with his Blue and White party, neither of them were able to basically get enough other parties together to form a governing coalition. There are 120 seats in the Knesset. Your coalition has to have at least 61 seats total. Neither have been able to do that. So what happened this election? I predicted, of course, knowing that I could be wrong, but I predicted that we would have to go to a fourth election. That this election that happened a few days ago on Tuesday in Israel would not be the election that ends it. Because from the polling data, and look, of course, polling data is what it is, right? It's just polling data. Sometimes it's right, sometimes it's not. It just kind of looked like it was going to be the same as the other two elections. So if I'm going to bet, I'm going to use the information that I have in front of me, I'm going to say the Israelis are going to a fourth election. Now, thankfully, I could be wrong. And here's why. So in the election on Tuesday, Netanyahu, his Likud party, did the best that it's done so far. And with his party, he got 36 seats compared to the Blue and White party, which got 33 seats. Now, if you remember, and after the second election, it was the Blue and White that actually got had more seats than Likud. They were the lead party. This time, Likud is the lead party. And apparently, one of the reasons why Likud won this time is because there's this software called Electoral that the Likud tech department, their tech guys, used to find voters, to basically locate the lowest kind of turnout areas and locate a lot of Likud voters that did not vote previously, and they were able to send them text messages encouraging them to get out to vote. And apparently this electoral software is what made a big difference in the voter turnout, because it was significantly higher this time around. And so with Netanyahu's entire block, with his block, so he won, Likud won 36 seats. There's another right-wing party, Shaz, won 9 seats. United Toward Judaism, 7. And Yamina, 6. So altogether, these four right-wing parties coming together that naturally form a coalition have 58 seats. So how many do you need? Well, you need 61. How many did he have? And how many seats did Netanyahu have in the first election, if you remember? Netanyahu had 60. He had 60 seats. He only needed one more. That was the big controversy. And Avigdor Lieberman's Yisrael Beitenu party, Israel Our Home party, I believe that's what it means, Israel Our Home, they could have put Netanyahu over. And they did not. He would not, and he forced us into a second round of elections. We're now on third round of elections. So the crazy thing is that even though Netanyahu did do much, much better this time around, he's still two less than what he had, two less seats than what he had in that first election when he had 60 seats. So we're kind of right back to where we started. Now, the difference is Lieberman and his Yisrael Beitenu party, it's one thing to say no to Netanyahu after the first election. It's quite another to say no after the third election, and you're going to be the guy to send the party into a fourth election. It's one thing to send the country into a second election. It's quite different to send the country into a fourth, which is what Lieberman will do if he does not join in with Netanyahu now. I'm not sure what Lieberman is going to do or what he said, but I do know that he is not a fan of Netanyahu. And not only that, but he is supporting a bill in the Israeli Knesset. And what this bill says, I tell you something, this is the it's amazing to see the similarities between Trump and Netanyahu, and what goes on one side of the pond goes on the other side of the pond. This is from the Jerusalem Post today, March 5th. Anti-Netanyahu bill has majority support with Lieberman vote. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu suffered a blow on Thursday afternoon when Yisrael Beitenu leader Avigdor Lieberman endorsed blue and white leader Benny Gantz's effort to pass a law that would prevent an indicted MK from forming a government. So they're trying to get a law passed through the Knesset that basically says if you are an MK, a member of Knesset, under indictment, you are not allowed to form a government. Now you go, but we're talking about the prime minister here. We're not talking about a member of Knesset. And that's actually not true. If you are the prime minister, you are also a member of the Knesset. So that's one of the wild things about Israeli politics is that even the prime minister has a seat in the Knesset. And so basically you have, I mean, this is kind of like Obama spying on the Trump administration during the campaign. You have Benny Gantz that is basically, Netanyahu's main political rival trying to pass a bill to keep him from being able to do the very thing that the voters want Netanyahu to do, which is why they made him the leader, which is why he essentially, his party, the Likud party, won this election. They have the most seats. And so they're trying to pass this bill that would make it impossible because he is under these indictments. If you want to know more about those indictments, you can listen to the previous episode. I go into those different indictments. I won't do that again here. Lieberman's endorsement gave the bill a majority with the support of all 62 MKs who are not in Netanyahu's right-wing bloc. Lieberman said he would also back term limits for prime ministers. Well, I can't argue with that one. We have those here in the States for our presidents, and I wish we also had them for our members of Congress, but I don't see Congress ever voting to limit its own power. Maybe one day. This is the era of Trump, so who knows? Netanyahu responded on Twitter asking Lieberman, "Are you just a liar who cannot be trusted, or do you have hidden motives?" In the tweet, Netanyahu included a collection of clips of Lieberman saying that he would oppose the bill and that Netanyahu could, in fact, function as prime minister under indictment. Lieberman then responded by asking Netanyahu the same question, attached an article about Netanyahu voting in favor of a bill in 2008 that would automatically topple an indicted prime minister. Uh-oh. Speaking at a meeting of the MKs in his right-wing bloc on Thursday, the prime minister said the effort to pass the bill would undermine democracy. The leaders of the parties in his bloc vowed to remain united and insist that only Netanyahu form the next government. Quote, "This is an effort to divide the nation when we are facing serious challenges like the corona crisis," Netanyahu said. In the part of the meeting that was open to the press, "There are also opportunities like U.S. President Donald Trump's plan that require us to be united and respect the will of the people." Anyway, this is, like I said, this is Jerusalem Post. I think this could also have to do with the Trump peace plan. It really could. The left does not like Trump's peace plan. And Netanyahu is essentially on board with moving ahead with that plan, at least as a framework, even if all of the details are going to be parsed out. And of course, in any kind of final agreement, things are going to change. But if you are, if you're an anti-Israel leftist, you don't like that plan. The Jews can stay in the West Bank. The Jews can stay in Judea and Samaria. And I mean, if you're some radical boycott, divest, sanction movement leftist, then you can't handle that. You can't handle the fact that there are Jews in Judea and Samaria, because you're essentially anti-Semitic. You're open borders everywhere else in the world, but you're not open borders when it comes to Judea and Samaria. So no, you're anti-Semitic. You don't want the Jews in there. And that's what Abbas has said in the past, that there won't be any Israelis in a future Palestinian state. So I think it's possible that this has something to do with that. I'm pretty sure that Benny Gantz and Avigdor Lieberman don't just have this just strong moral, such a strong impenetrable moral center that says, an indicted, it's just morally wrong. It's just morally wrong for an indicted prime minister to serve as prime minister. I'm pretty sure that is not what is going on. So that's essentially what is going on with the Israeli elections. We will see what ends up happening. It is possible. It is possible. And it looks like they have the votes to make it to where Netanyahu cannot form a government. And if that's what they do, then Netanyahu's not going to be able to. He does have his trial coming up on March 17th. So hopefully they can get this going and get this behind him. But I mean, trials take a long time. So who knows how long that could take. And that's the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is that Netanyahu is not prime minister. Had the situations been reversed, I don't think this would have ever happened. I think they don't like Netanyahu's kind of Israel first agenda, so to speak. And especially if you're a globalist or you're in favor of this kind of big Palestinian state, then you're not going to like Netanyahu. Even though the Palestinians themselves have rejected pretty amazing offers in the past. They still have this fantasy that they're going to have something like that in the future. And trust me when I tell you, they will never have that. Okay, I want to talk about one more thing. If you're familiar with American politics at all, you have heard of the phrase, the swamp. And what is the swamp, really? The swamp is those, really, it's a group of people. It's not necessarily a particular location, although it is located in D.C., the swamp is a particular class of people, and it's really comprised of a few people. Those who are just generally corrupt, right? They're just downright crooks. And then there are other people who they're not necessarily just downright crooks, where they're trying to steal money or steal information or whatever. But what they are trying to do, or their crookishness lies in that, is that they are trying to use their position, whether it's in the FBI or the CIA or the NSA or the Justice Department, or even in the Trump administration itself, who are actively seeking to undermine the president of the United States. That they have a job to do. They show up at the FBI or the NSA, and they have a job to do. And that is to protect our country. But what they do instead is that they attempt to use their position to undermine the president of the United States. That is criminal. That's criminal activity. You're not allowed to do that. So it's those kinds of people that comprise of the swamp. And most of the times, it's usually the higher ups. It's guys like James Comey, guys like Rod Rosenstein, who was talking about wearing wires to try to get the president removed via the 25th Amendment. I mean, if you can believe a deputy AG would do that, well, we had that guy. You follow the names, Stroke and McCabe and all these guys that we've been hearing about essentially the nonstop, it seems, for the past 4 years. But there's another level of the swamp. There's even a deeper level of the swamp, even than using your position as at the FBI or CIA to try to undermine the president's agenda, and that is when you essentially become a spy for an enemy terrorist organization. You know, it's almost as if these days, it's almost as if you question that there might be someone in in one of the branches of government that does not uphold their kind of their oath, absolutely, you're some kind of crazy conspiracy theorist. I think most of them are hardworking people wanting to come in and do their job. But some of them are spies. And some of them that you might not expect. This is from the Wall Street Journal, March 4th. Warren Strobel and Aruna Viswanathan. I got that name. I'm looking at that name going, how do you use Viswanathan, Aruna Viswanathan? A military linguist was charged with providing classified information, including the real names of people spying for the U.S., to a Lebanese man connected to the Iran-backed Hezbollah militant group. So a military linguist was giving classified information, real names, people who spy for the U.S., giving the names of spies, of our spies, to a Lebanese man connected to Hezbollah. Look, if there's one group of people that need protecting, it is our spies. Do you know what they do to spies when caught? Yeah, I don't have to tell you. This is serious. This is serious. And I kind of get the idea, honestly, that this lady was just kind of whacked out. In what would be a major security breach, officials said the linguist, Miriam Taha Thompson, 61 years old, who works under, and that's gonna get even weirder in a second, the fact that she's 61 years old, who works under contract for the Defense Department, transmitted the highly classified data while serving at a Special Operations Task Force site in Erbil, Iraq. A Federal Bureau of Investigation affidavit said beginning around December 30th, 2019, the same day protesters stormed the U.S. Embassy in Iraq to protest U.S. airstrikes a day earlier, computer audit logs showed a shift in Ms. Thompson's activity on classified Pentagon computer networks. In the ensuing 40 days, Ms. Thompson accessed 57 files, which, quote, she did not have a legitimate need to access, concerning names and other identifying information regarding 8 U.S. human intelligence sources, the affidavit said. So after these protesters stormed the embassy in Iraq to protest the U.S. airstrikes, which, of course, the U.S. airstrikes were in retaliation to a strike on our contractor, right, things start getting fishy with her activity. She's accessing stuff that she really had no need to access. Ms. Thompson of Rochester, Minnesota, was arrested in Iraq on February 27th and faces espionage charges. She did not comment on the charges during a brief court hearing on Wednesday and hasn't yet entered a plea. In the affidavit, the government said that Ms. Thompson acknowledged to FBI agents after her arrest that she passed classified information to a contact in whom she had, quote, a romantic interest. Are you kidding me? So this 61-year-old lady has a romantic interest in this Lebanese man connected to Hezbollah. Bizarro world. I mean, you're literally, as a 61-year-old lady, you're going to put your life on the line because you have some romantic interest in this terrorist? I mean, this is crazy town stuff. While in a war zone, the defendant, the defendant allegedly gave sensitive national defense information, including the names of individuals helping the United States, to a Lebanese national located overseas. Assistant Attorney General for National Security John C. Dimmer said in a statement. Ms. Thompson appeared in federal court in Washington for the Wednesday hearing, dressed in a red cardigan and with her hair pulled back. She sat quietly as U.S. Magistrate Judge Robin Merriweather read aloud the charges against her. If convicted, Ms. Thompson faces the possibility of life in prison. This is just sad. Why would a lady do this to herself? Pray for Ms. Thompson that maybe she'll find Jesus Christ in prison. That's where she's going. That's where she should be going. When you pass information about our spies to any foreign organization, any organization domestically at all, it could be to the freaking Red Cross. Like, you cannot pass classified information about our spies and our activity to anybody, much less Hezbollah. Now, Hezbollah itself, that's becoming a sad story because it appears that Lebanon, in the wake of their revolution, is potentially being taken over by Hezbollah. So that is that's something that I really need to do a show on in the future to kind of update you guys on what's going on with Hezbollah. But that's another situation. Ms. Thompson said little during the hearing other than to say she was a diabetic and had high blood pressure. She is scheduled to be back in court on March 11th. The prosecutor said the government then plans to ask for her continued detention, arguing Ms. Thompson poses a grave threat to, quote, human assets in an active military zone. And I read through parts of the affidavit the other day. It was just, look, it's just bizarre stuff. She's over there in Iraq. She's got this romantic interest in this guy connected to Hezbollah. She passes top secret information about her spies onto them. You can't do that. You just absolutely can't do that. And that's what happened. I'm glad she was caught. And the full process of the law needs to be played out, so that other people in her position or similar positions don't do this kind of thing. You are putting our when spies are found out, even amongst the most civilized nations, when spies are caught, they get killed. They're spies. They're like the cockroach in the closet. I mean, if the light shines on them, they're dead. And so when it comes to our spies, you can't. And the full weight of the law needs to come out. All right, guys. Well, I think that is going to be the shortest episode of Mideast News Brief, I think, ever. Again, thank you guys for your patience on waiting on a show. Like I said, I got the flu, and it was kind of nasty. And I've been on recovery, but fortunately I'm doing much better. I'm almost at 100% now, which has obviously enabled me to do this show. And then next week I'll be out of town, so no show next week, but we should have one the week after that, around the 18th or so. So again, thank you guys so much for joining us. Remember to subscribe to the podcast wherever you can subscribe to podcasts, please do. And also please leave us a 5-star review. That helps us out a lot. Email me, mideast@cgmradio.com. And remember, the articles discussed in this show will be in the show notes of this podcast and at cgmradio.com/Mideast. For you guys that are on spring break, have a great spring break. Have a great weekend, and we will see you guys right here next time.